I have a pretty big teacher's voice. I probably won't stand here, but if you can't hear me, do this, and I'll try to talk louder. Okay. So I was being observed while I was teaching one time, and the superintendent of the school district came in to do my observation, and the technology failed on me, and I had this really cool smart board lesson, and the smart board didn't work, so... it's not a big deal. I can observe from here. I'll just be looking this way a little bit more because this little guy's gone to sleep. So as I practiced how long all this would take me, I had my notes spread out here, my Bible over here. And yesterday when Bonnie said, oh, I'll put my Bible over here because she'd had all her scriptures written down in her lesson, I thought, should have done that because this isn't as big as my whole kitchen table was when I practiced. I'm glad that Vicki went through some of the tribulations in the Bible because I haven't really put a whole lot of scriptures in my actual presentation. This that's in our book, don't try to follow along with this while I'm talking. It's not going to match up. There's some verses here, and I kind of refer back and forth to this a little bit, but I'm talking from this. Tribulations are some big, some small. They're very personalized. What might be a huge deal to you might be nothing to me and the other way around. Because somebody else has what might be judged larger tribulations than you doesn't make yours not important. I think Bonnie was the one that didn't make her title jive with the pattern. I didn't really want to make my title jive with the pattern either, but I didn't know Vicki as well as she did, so I thought I better follow the rules. So, calling this lesson, Don't Grow Weary in Dealing with Tribulations, what I really wanted to do was to look at the end of Galatians 6:9. Most translations say, and let us not grow weary while doing good, for in due season we shall reap. I'm short. In due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart. Okay? The New International Version, which I realize is kind of a loose version, says, let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. Okay, that is the part of not losing heart that makes the most sense to me. Becky, am I talking loud enough? Okay. Ever since I was a little kid, when things got hard, I just wanted to quit. Okay? I tried a lot of things, but if it got hard, it's like, I quit. If people didn't like me or criticized what I was saying or doing, I was like, I don't need to do that. I'll just go do something else. As an adult, I've had the same thing happen, especially in relation to serving God. If other people that I had a lot of confidence in stopped serving God, completely turned their back on what the Bible said, and just started going their own way, I'm like, why should I even keep trying? You know, I wanted to give up. We've had some health problems, health challenges with our children and our family. And that can be very discouraging. You know, you look around and say, well, all of these people who are making no efforts at serving God and everything's just going hunky-dory for them, you can feel a little persecuted. You can feel like God isn't really on your side, although you know that is not true. So I kind of felt that I wasn't being treated fairly. I don't want to pick on my daughter who's here, and I can't even remember which one of the challenges that she has gone through when she said to me with tears in her face and in her voice, it's just not fair. And I can't remember if I said this to her, and like I said, I can't remember. Becky, was it diabetes or was it spina bifida? Diabetes. I said, what has happened? Did I say it? I thought, what has happened in our life and in our family, honey, that ever made you think life was fair? Okay? Some people get all the breaks. Some people get all the challenges. It happens. Going back to that idea of God not treating me fairly and feeling that way, On the opposite side of that is my husband, who said, why not us? When our son was born with Down syndrome, and I was going, why? Why us? I did everything I was supposed to do. He said, why not us? Why should this child not have us for parents? Okay? We can take care of him. We can provide for him. And we have God in our lives to help us and support us. Sometimes when people have misinterpreted my motives, talked badly about me, I wanted to quit then too. But we have to remember the Christian life in general, is not promised to be easy. I remember when I was a teenager, there was a song on the radio, and they had a really catchy line in the chorus. And that line was, I was going to sing it, and then I was going to ask Jill to sing it, but I decided, sometimes I have trouble starting on the right note. And a lot of you are old enough to remember this. I beg your pardon. I never promised you a rose garden. Okay? When I think about a rose garden, I think that I have the impression in my mind that life is going to be beautiful and sweet-smelling and enjoyable and fun all the time. The next line, can you still hear me if I stand over here? Because I have trouble standing still. Because I might need to come stand by this little girl who's missing tape. All of my teacher friends' proximity control. Anyway, the next line in that song was, along with the sunshine, there's got to be a little rain sometimes. Okay? Our lives are not always going to be sunshine and roses. It's not always going to be easy. But you need rain for the roses to grow. Okay? You also appreciate that sunshine a lot more when it's contrasted with those rainy days, those tribulating times of tribulations in your life. And rain is not bad. Rain is just rain. And God promises in Matthew 5, verse 45, that it's going to fall on all women. I said that because this is the Wichita Women's Weekend. The Bible actually said that it'll fall on all men, just and unjust. All right? So we do need that rain for the rose garden to grow. Just very quickly, giving up in our tribulations. Tribulations is what makes us give up, okay? Things are hard. Some of the main things that maybe we might do or think about, we might focus on our shortcomings. And at the end, I'll read some verses here. They're in your handout that you can go to later if you want to, because I'm going to get to those if I have time. But we focus on what's not good in our lives and our shortcomings. Sometimes we get caught up in our own personal heartaches. Sometimes we feel like we're not being encouraged. Or maybe we feel persecuted. The Bible speaks to all of those situations and many, many others, of course. These things that go through our minds that cause us to want to quit, those are kind of mental processes, mental reactions to very real things that are going on in our lives. Our tribulations are not trivial, right? Start with that same three letters, T-R-I, but they are not the same. So I want to look at a couple of stories. In both the Old and the New Testament, we can read stories of children who were sick or had died, and they were either healed or restored to life by and through the power of God. In John 4, we read about Jesus healing the very ill son of a royal official. Jesus sent that man on his way with the promise that your son lives. In Matthew 17, a child suffering with an illness that kind of resembled epilepsy to me was cured by Jesus. In Matthew 9, Jesus raised the daughter of a synagogue official from the dead. Of course, children were not the only focus of Jesus' compassion. In Matthew 4, verses 23 and 24, it says, Jesus was going throughout all Galilee, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom and healing every kind of disease and every kind of sickness among the people. The news about him spread throughout all Syria, and they brought to him all who were ill, those suffering with various diseases and pains, demoniacs, epileptics, paralytics, and he healed them. All right, I'm going to turn to the book of 1 Kings. We can read the story about Elijah raising the dead son of a widow woman whom he had been living with. I'm not going to go too much into the backstory. I think that we know it. But in 1 Kings 17, I want to read from 17 through 24. Now it came about after these things that the son of the woman, the mistress of the house, became sick. And his sickness was so severe that there was no breath left in him. So she said to Elijah, "What do I have to do with you, O man of God? You have come to me to bring my iniquity to remembrance and to put my son to death." He said to her, "Give me your son." Then he took him from her bosom and carried him up to the upper room where he was living and laid him on his own bed. He called to the Lord and said, "O Lord my God, have you also brought calamity to the widow with whom I am staying by causing her son to die?" Then he stretched himself upon the child three times and called to the Lord and said, "O Lord my God, I pray you, let this child's life return to him." The Lord heard the voice of Elijah, and the life of the child returned to him, and he revived. Elijah took the child and brought him down from the upper room into the house and gave him to his mother. And Elijah said, "See, your son is alive." Then the woman said to Elijah, "Now I know that you are a man of God and that the word of the Lord in your mouth is truth." I read the whole story because I really wanted to say this again. Now I know that you are a man of God. She got her wish. Elijah's prayers were answered. And so she said, "Now I know that you are a man of God." But we often find ourselves in the position of having to know and accept and believe that God is God and that he loves us. And that he has the power and the ability to do anything in spite of the fact that we didn't get that kind of proof. Is God no longer good because we don't get that answer? We'd have to say he is. We can't give up because we don't get the positive resolution of tribulations that we really were praying for. We're desperately praying for. We have to remember what it says in Isaiah chapter 55. And if you'll turn there, I was going to read a kind of a longer passage, but I think I'm going to cut that down. Isaiah 55. We'll just start with verse 7. Let the wicked forsake his way and the unrighteous man his thoughts. And let him return to the Lord, and he will have compassion on him and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, nor are my ways your ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. Okay? We can't imagine why God wouldn't want what we want and what we're praying for. Why would he not want all of my children to be faithful? As I have so many friends who wish that even one of their children was faithful. Why would he not want my son to live? We can't understand. I don't get it sometimes. But we still have to know that God is God. And he is powerful and can do anything. All right, so going back to the thought that we aren't promised a life without tribulations and struggles and hardships and sorrows. If this life, the one we're living in now, was all that great, we wouldn't have a longing for the life to come. Okay? So maybe that's one reason God doesn't let it all be perfect and great here. Okay? We need a desire to go on to the next place. But realizing that we walk with other Christians who support us, and maybe have been through the same struggles themselves, or even just sometimes struggles. Sometimes we look here at everybody else, and I got all the problems. The little rain cloud is over my head like the guy in the cartoon, and you all are living in the sunshine all the time. And that's what we think sometimes. So I think it's important for us to like know each other's stories a little bit and share our struggles. And maybe you have a very exact problem that somebody here has been through and they can help you with, or maybe just knowing that, you know, everybody's life has some showers and rainstorms in them. But I would like to share at least one of the struggles that my family and I have gone through as an encouragement to you. And so I'm going to try to weave this story in with the record of the Shunammite widow that you can read about in 2 Kings. So if you guys want to go ahead and open your Bibles to 2 Kings chapter 4, I'm going to jump in and out of that story. And I have a very simple PowerPoint up here that may or may not work. We shall see. Okay. So I'm going to start reading in verse 18 of 2 Kings. Oh, I did want to make this statement. I hope that it isn't too disrespectful for me to break up God's word and throw in some thoughts. I want to tell you what happened on April 4th, 2001. I had four children. I had one born in 1980. She's over there. I had one born in 1982. I had one born in 1987, and I had one born in 1990. My son was born in 1990, died on April 4th, 2001. So I'd like to tell you the story of the night that we died. Some of you know this story very well. Some of you were there. So, get myself back together. Becky, do you have a drink? Verse, well, it would help if I turned to the right page in my Bible. 2 Kings, chapter 4. All right, verse 18. When the child was grown, the day came that he went out to his father, to the reapers. He said to his father, "My head, my head." And the father said to his servant, "Carry him to his mother." All right, so I kind of visualize this boy is raising an alarm. Oh, my head hurts, okay? It was his cry of distress. It was his statement of symptoms, okay? The night that Luke died, he was having a sleep study. He had been diagnosed with primary pulmonary hypertension. We were taking him home, going to go home in a couple of days, and we were trying to figure out what kind of support does he need to breathe at night. So he's having a sleep study. They've gotten to the point where they've determined that, yeah, the kid has sleep apnea. He needs one of those machines to breathe with. There's a couple of different kinds, so they were trying them. All right? So, my 11-year-old son with Down syndrome, with an IQ of somewhere between 70 and 80, says, "I'm suffocating." I never heard that child use that word before. I'm suffocating, you know? An IQ between 70 and 80 is generally classified as mentally retarded. He was a great guy and very high achieving, but he was mentally retarded. That was Luke's cry of distress, is what I feel like. I'm suffocating? I said, "Honey, you're not suffocating." The technician doing the test said, "You know, kids feel kind of weird with those masks on their face. These things are forcing air down your lungs, some different things." He said, "He's all right." He said, "Kids complain about that a lot. Jerry's told me the same thing in surgery. They don't like it." Verse 20 says, am I going to get one line? Yes. All right. When he had taken him, the servant, and brought him to his mother, he sat on her lap until noon and then died. Rebecca Lynn, you're going to have to leave if you can't stop that. Jerry, I'm taking liberties. I cannot remember what floor Luke was on. All of a sudden, this is what's going on. Fourth floor. Well, let's call it four, Henson. Over the PA system in the hospital at 3 o'clock in the morning. Code blue. 3 Henson, 4 Henson. They're calling that for my baby. Those might be the most terrifying words you ever hear when you're in the hospital. But, you know, they were calling help. for my son. There was a team. People were coming from everywhere. It's the middle of the night. Of course, they're working. They're starting CPR. Me, I ran. I found a hallway. I was crouched. I was silently crying because it was the middle of the night. Some sort of nurse found me. Okay, I want to read from verse 21 to 25. She went up and laid him on the bed of the man of God and shut the door behind him and went out. Then she called her husband and said, "Please send me one of the donkeys that I may run to the man of God and return." I think it's interesting that she wanted the man of God. He said, "Why will you go to him today? It is neither new moon nor Sabbath." And she said, "It will be well." Then she saddled the donkey and said to her servant, "Drive and go forward. Do not slow down the pace for me unless I tell you." So she went and came to the man of God to Mount Carmel. When the man of God saw her at a distance, he said to Gehazi, his servant, "Behold, there is the Shunammite." I'd like to tell you what I was doing as they are running a code on my son. When the nurse came to get me, it all of a sudden occurred to me that this might not end well. I have kind of a habit of using magical thinking. I really have led a pretty charmed life, I feel like. And I thought, it'll be okay. But it's the middle of the night, and my husband is not there. So I thought, I'm going to have to call Dick. So when they took me back, I called my husband. I thought, I cannot tell him what's going on here. I just said, "You need to get down here." So he said, "I'm on my way." We have a 13-year-old who's home. So my next thought was, Lindsay is all alone. So I made another phone call. I called my friend Avelda, and I said, "I need you to go to my house, please, now." She said, "Okay, I'm on my way." She got in her car, went over there, actually passed Dick on the road. She lived only a few miles away. And then I remembered that Jerry was in the hospital. I have a very good friend who's an OR nurse at Children's Mercy Hospital, and she had come to the room before they started Luke's sleep study and said, "I'm on call tonight." And she could have gone home. She lived within the 30 minutes. She said, "I'm just going to sleep." I think maybe she'd already done some cases and she was tired. She said, "I'm going to sleep in the on-call room." I don't know why she told me that. I'm glad she did. So I asked that nurse that was with me, "My friend's asleep in there. Would you please go get her?" You know, you might think you're all alone in a hospital in the middle of the night, but you're not, okay? She was there. Others are coming. I thought of something else. Our preacher didn't live that far from the hospital. I called him and said, "Could you and Pat come down here?" Another person who said to me, "We're on our way." Nobody asked any questions. Nobody said, "Oh, it's the middle of the night, Jeannie," or asked for any explanations. But I kind of feel like I'm a little scatterbrained sometimes. Some of you may know that. But in a situation that is totally out of my control, I was marshaling the people that I would need, and God's people responded without a question or a moment's hesitation. And this wasn't the first time that those people or other people had responded to us in similar situations. You know, when Luke was first born with Down syndrome, we had an outpouring of support. People took care of our other children. People sat with us in hospitals. When Luke was five, well, he had his first heart surgery in St. Louis. We had to go across the state to St. Louis. People from the church there came and sat with us. They didn't even know us. They might have met us somewhere at a meeting one time. Came and sat with us. When Luke was five, he had to get a pacemaker.
Most five-year-olds don't have pacemakers. But here again, everybody rallied around us. Every single time, God's people have supported us. But I would like to say that being able to and rallying the support in the middle of the night is a good reminder that when we need help, people don't always know it. You know, you don't always need help in the middle of the night in a hospital, but you got to let people know if you need help. You have to not be so proud that you won't ask, and you don't need to be feeling that you're imposing on people. That's our job. That's why God made the church. That's why he put us together. We are not the people that think, I can be a Christian all by myself. We need each other. So anyway, I just kind of thought that the middle of the night, me needing help, was symbolic of how we often feel ourselves. We're all alone in the dark. Nobody knows that we need help. Well, we need to let them know. And I hope that I'm not stepping on some things that Amy would like to say, but I also wanted to say this, that God's people are key and they're critical to us being able to survive the tribulations that we're going to go through. We know, everybody knows that God is always with us, but we need his people when we are weak and when we are struggling to be God's presence, God's physical entity in the present time, in the moment. You know, we need somebody that can put their hand on us. There are times when we are in such despair that we cannot think of God on our own. We need some help. All right, in verse 26, it says, please run now to meet her. Gehazi talking to his servant. Please run now to meet her and say to her, is it well with you? Is it well with your husband? Is it well with your child? And she answered, it is well. Now that's interesting. She says that in verse 26. It's also recorded in verse 23 that she said to her husband, it will be well. I wonder if that's her realization that whether her son lives or not, everything is well. It'll all be okay. Having said that, I will add, she's trying to get to the man of God. She's not just going to give up. She's looking for the man of God to get his assistance. And that makes me think of how we like to surround ourselves with God's people when times are difficult. So the charge nurse had called Jerry from... The charge nurse had called Jerry before she came into the waiting room where they had stashed me. I guess Jerry checked in on the code. And Jerry, I feel, had to say something very difficult. She came into the room, and the first thing she said to me was, it doesn't look good. Don't you know she wished she could have said, he's doing great. I thought we would pass the buck. But I will have to say that having a little bit of preparation in my mind, I think doctors do this. They don't give you the whole blow at once. They say, well, let us, it could be this, it could be that, let us do some tests. Okay, well, we've narrowed this. So you get the information, your mind absorbs it a little bit at a time. But anyway, Jerry said, it doesn't look good. And I wish she hadn't had to say that, but I think it was very helpful for me to prepare myself. Okay, if we read verses 27 to 29, it says, when she came to the man of God to the hill, she caught hold of his feet, and Gehazi came near to push her away. But the man of God said, let her alone, for her soul is troubled within her, and the Lord has hidden it from me and has not told me. Then she said, "Did I ask for a son from my Lord? Did I not say, 'Do not deceive me'?" Then he said to Gehazi, "Gird up your loins and take my staff in your hands and go your way. If you meet any man, do not salute him. And if anyone salutes you, do not answer him, and lay my staff on the lad's face." In my mind, I'm envisioning this is Gehazi's code blue. You know, he has been sent on to do what he can do. There were desperate measures going on in a room that I couldn't bring myself to go into, trying to keep Luke alive. And one of the nurses came in and asked for permission to stop the code. Okay, now Jerry's with me, but Jerry is not Luke's father. And they're asking me to stop the code. And I told them, I cannot make that decision. All right? In my head, I know that Dick is on his way. I'm thinking, well, my husband is not here, and I can't allow them to stop what they're doing without Dick getting to have some say in that. I needed to pray about it, but for one thing, they want to know now. And I couldn't think to pray. I would never fault anybody who was placed in a position like this and made the decision to stop those measures. Sometimes it has to be done. But in that situation, that day, and that time, I couldn't do it. I could not envision that Dick would get there, which I know he's coming, he's on his way, and I would have to say, Luke is dead, and I gave them permission to stop the code? No, thank you. I couldn't do it. I didn't want to think about what was going on in there. I've seen codes shocking little hearts, but I couldn't let them stop. If we'll read now from verses 30 to 32, the mother of the lad said, "As the Lord lives and as you yourself live, I will not leave you." And he arose and followed her. Then Gehazi passed on before them and laid the staff on the lad's face, but there was no sound or response. So he returned to meet him and told him, "The lad has not awakened." When Elijah came into the house, behold, the lad was dead and laid on his bed. My husband is still not here. We lived about 35, 40 minutes from the hospital, and I'm sure he was booking it. It was the middle of the night. And they came back and they said, "Luke made the decision for us." You all know what that means, right? Luke's prognosis for the next couple of years was not good. Okay? He had something that could not be treated. They had said he might live if he gets a lung transplant, but lung transplants, especially 17 years ago, weren't like kidney transplants. They weren't even like heart transplants. He was gonna live a couple of years. He would probably suffocate slowly over the course of a couple of years while we watched him. And we would love him and we would make his life as good as it could be. But Luke didn't make the decision. God made the decision. He knew what was best. And it happened. Okay. Because of that, even in all of this suffering and tribulation, Luke was spared suffering for a couple of years. We were spared watching it. One thing that I really, really was worried about is what would I say to my 11-year-old when and if he asked me, "Mommy, am I dying? Mommy, am I going to die?" We didn't have to answer that question. We didn't have to decide, because that would have been a decision that we would have had to weigh about a lung transplant.
One of the days when Luke was in the hospital, his IV infiltrated and they had to change it. You would have thought they were amputating his arm when they took off the tape. It's tape, people. And I thought, how can we make that decision to put him through a lung transplant when he can't have tape taken off his arm? So we didn't have to make that decision. Verses 33 to 36. So he entered and shut the door behind them both and prayed to the Lord. And he went and lay on the child and put his mouth on his mouth and his eyes on his eyes and his hands on his hands. And he stretched himself on him, and the flesh of the child became warm. Then he returned and walked in the house once back and forth and went up and stretched himself on him. And the lad sneezed seven times, and the lad opened his eyes. He called Gehazi and said, "Call that Shunammite." So he called her. And when she came into him, he said, "Take up your son." I cannot imagine the joy she felt, the tears she cried of happiness, and the relief and thanksgiving that were in her heart. He's alive again. This is what I thought would happen. He's not going to die. I think Dick had finally gotten here shortly after they came in. Just so happened that Tom and Pat arrived at the same time as Dick into the hospital, and they rode up with him on the elevator. I'm sure Dick knew before he got off the elevator when he saw Tom and Pat. But I was not able to say, "Come take up your son." I had to say, "He's gone." I don't ever want to have to say that again. You know, you think, wow, this is a really bad thing. Nothing this bad will happen to us again. But I've got a daughter with type 1 diabetes. It's a manageable disease, but it cannot be cured. That one better not die before me. It could happen, though. You know, we're not guaranteed because we've been through one problem that we won't have others. And I don't want to, you know, make a list. Some of you know we've had some other serious health challenges and things in our family. Terry was, my friend from Kansas City, was saying, man, you guys have had a lot of stuff in your family. You know, Becky's got a daughter with spina bifida. That's a big old hairy can of worms also. But Becky knows how to handle it. People are watching us, guys, as we go through our tribulations, whether they are huge, and I think this is huge, but you know what? It's not the worst thing. My husband will say, having your child die is not the worst thing that could happen. Having your child not be faithful, and I have so many friends in that place now, but it's not over. Right? That's the worst thing. That's a lot worse. So we were not alone. God's people were with us. Giving up is not an option. Okay? Now, the other thing I would like to say about giving up, let's not grow weary in dealing with all of these tribulations. Let's not give up because other people are watching us. I had three other kids, all right? First of all, one of them was only 13 years old. So she got to see all of it. Becky and Andy were at Florida College, and I'm not saying they weren't affected. Of course they were. But they didn't have to deal with mom day and night. Lindsay didn't go anywhere or do anything for probably 6 weeks, 2 months. And if she did, she'd say, "What are you and Dad going to do?" She was worrying about us, you know. But I knew that I didn't want her to think. I couldn't just lose it and stay in bed and cry all the time and have her think,
wonder if Mom would have been better if I died and not Luke. Number one, I would never want my children to think I love this one more than the others, because I don't. So that was one reason that I feel like I could not give up. I couldn't succumb. The other thing was, in relation to those other three children, is even though Becky was 20 years old, I think Andy was 18, or maybe she was 21 and Andy was 19. That's it. I feel like I'm still teaching them. Maybe not so much now, she's 38, but definitely when she's 21. How do we handle problems? How do we handle problems? The only way I can think of is to show, okay? The only way I can help other people maybe is to share a story. Your tribulations are not going to be my tribulations. Mine aren't any worse. They're just different, okay? I had to fight, and I would say that I went through a period when Luke was young, when he was a baby, and he had had a heart surgery, and he had Down syndrome, and those were big deals to me at the time. And some of my friends would complain because their children had an ear infection, and I'm like, wow, I'm sorry. And in my head, sometimes I was being ungracious, and I was thinking, are you kidding me? You got an ear infection? I had to grow. As we all do, I'm sure. So I've just kind of given you a hybrid story, putting my story in with the Shunammite woman of two sons who were very much loved and cared for. And I wish that we had gotten the results, the end result of that Shunammite woman, but we did not. And yet, I still have to come to the conclusion that God is God. He's in control. He only wants what's good for us. Paul calls some of these things that we go through light afflictions. Okay? If you want to look at 2 Corinthians 4, and verse 16 through 18, it says, therefore, we do not lose heart, but though our outer man is decaying, yet our inner man is being renewed day by day. For momentary light affliction is producing for us an eternal weight of glory, far beyond all comparison, while we look not at the things which are seen, but the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. Romans 5, verse 3 and 4 has a similar thought. And not only this, but we also exult in our tribulations. You want to say a cheer? 2, 4, 6, 8. We exult in our tribulations, knowing that tribulation brings about perseverance, and perseverance proven character, hope, and on, etc. Rejoice in those tribulations. All right, I'd like to go back to the things that cause us to be disheartened and discouraged that are on your handout, but we will look at them very briefly. I want to read Philippians 3. Verses 13 and 14. Thinking of the idea of focusing on our shortcomings. Brethren, I do not regard myself as having laid hold of it yet, but one thing I do, forgetting what lies behind. Okay? Don't focus on those shortcomings. Forgetting what lies behind and reaching forward to what lies ahead, I press on toward the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. How not to give up? Stop looking back. Stop worrying about what you're not so good at and press on. life is full of a lot of heartaches. If we look at Romans 8 and verse 28, it says, "And we know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God." Many people read that verse and stop there, okay? You do want to think of it when you're thinking about things that are bad. God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. We need to stay on that path and on the trajectory of going to heaven and serving God. And God will make things work for good. I'm not saying God causes things to happen. I don't know. But I know that God can make anything work out for good for us. Sometimes we need some more encouragement. And I would say in relation to that, realizing that we sometimes need more encouragement, let's look to those whom we might give that encouragement to. Hebrews 3, verses 12 and 13 says, "Take care, brethren, that there not be in any one of you an evil, unbelieving heart that falls away from the living God, but encourage one another day after day, as long as it is still called today, so that none of you will be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin." Encourage people so they don't give up. Okay? You might have a picture of guys running in a track meet or a cross-country meet, and we're standing on the side saying, "You can do it. Good job. Keep going." All right? We need to do that for each other. And sometimes we feel persecuted. In Matthew chapter 5, I will read just a little bit of that, verse 11 and 12, it says, "Blessed are you when people insult you and persecute you." What? Yeah. "Blessed are you when people insult you and persecute you and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward in heaven is great. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you." Okay, three more verses. How can we keep from giving up? Okay, stay positive. I tried to mention some of the things during the story of the night Luke died that were positive, even on a terrible night. I sent a letter to a good friend after Luke died, and I said, "How could my son have been so sick that he died?" And I was clueless. I had no idea that he was that sick. We took him to the hospital 2 weeks before because he was throwing up. And he died. He never went home. And so she very lovingly pointed out all of the blessings that had happened in that time period. You know, she said, he was in the hospital where they took good care of him. He died under care with people awake, so you didn't have to wake up one morning at home and go in his room and he was dead. You knew that everything had been done for him that possibly could have been done. Becky and Andy were, as I mentioned, at Florida College. Becky had a bridal shower. Becky got married 6 weeks after her brother died. Becky had a bridal shower scheduled for like April 15th. I'm just going to make that day up. And when he first went to the hospital, she said, "Mom, I want to come home." I said, "Stay at school. There's nothing you can do. I want to come home. I want to come home." Somebody said, "Let her come home." So a friend got on the phone and got tickets and had her fiance and my son home like in 12 hours. Luke died before she was scheduled to come home. That's a good thing. You know? How could I have lived with that? How could she have lived with that? So anyway, she just pointed out all of the positive things. Stay positive. Look for the positive. There are good things in all bad things. All right? In Daniel chapter 3... and verse 17 and 18. go. Daniel's three friends were about to be thrown into a furnace. And it says in verse 16, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to give you an answer concerning this matter. If it be so, our God," you know, if you do throw us in the furnace, "our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the furnace of blazing fire, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But even if he does not, let it be known to you, O king, that we are not going to serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up." Just one example of someone in the Bible who looked for a positive slant to the situation that they found themselves in. So stay positive. Look for what's positive. Us as friends of people who are going through tribulations, don't be afraid to mention the positives to them. Keep trying, okay? Don't give up. That's the most important thing about not giving up, is you got to keep trying. In Philippians 3 and verse 12, says, right before the verses that I read earlier, "Not that I have already obtained it or have already become perfect, but I press on so that I may lay hold of that for which also I was laid hold of by Christ Jesus." And the last verse I'd like to read today is Psalms 34, verses 17 through 18. We got to keep praying. "I know I said to you in the midst of the only few minutes that it took for Luke to leave this earth, I couldn't think to do it." But Psalms 34, verse 17 and 18 says, "The righteous cry and the Lord hears and delivers them out of all their troubles. The Lord is near to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit." I hope that you're not one of those persons who are crushed in spirit, but if you are, I hope that you get courage to keep on trying and not give up, because there's a reward. Thanks.